Hey, football fans, it's Patrick Peterson, former three-time All-Pro NFL cornerback, and now the new host of First and Pod, the podcast that breaks down every game, every week, with new episodes dropping every Monday and Friday mornings. Plus, I'll be highlighting key matchups for DBs around the league on Patrick's Corner. Be sure to subscribe to First and Pod on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Baseball time, turn on the fan. JD's coming on, he's a baseball man. I gotta get the scoop before I drive home from the kid from Queens calling Arlington home. Car pulls up, who can it be? A fresh El Camino, it's my daily. He rolls down his window and he started to say, it's all about making that kick-ass trade. Cause the boys in the front office are always hard. Come talking that trash and they'll pull your card. Knowing nothing in life but to be legit. Don't quote me, skin, I ain't said spit.
The John Daniels Show, brought to you by Evan Williams Bourbon and BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
And joining us now is the GM of the Texas Rangers, John J.D. Daniels. How you doing, J.D.?
I'm all right, guys. How are you, man?
Hey, we appreciate you you joining us here on the final visit of the season. And I guess let's just dive in there, and we'll start with, what do you feel like you learned about your team, your manager, your players? What did you learn this season now that it's behind you?
Man, a lot. Start with Woody and the staff. I mean, felt strongly we made the right call at the time, feel better about it now. I mean, just his, he's got such a unique blend of confidence and humility, if that makes sense. Like, really intelligent, but really curious. And I think he was able to relate to the guys, top to bottom. And when we got buy-in from some guys early, you saw with Gallo or Calhoun kind of out of the chute, and the other guys took some time, but I felt like by the end of the year, like, guys understood what he was trying to accomplish and, why we were presenting the information we were and why it was important. And, he said it in the press conference today, like, there were times during the year where I would say, hey, I think we need to address this or that. And he would think about it and he would be really thoughtful. And he'd say, yeah, like, yes, you're right, but this is why I want to wait. And, there were times I felt like maybe, could we have a little more sense of urgency? But, he was playing the long game and he was building relationships and equity with these guys. And I think he accomplished that. I think we're going to be better off going forward because of it. On the team, some really, really bright spots and some guys as well that, need to make some big jumps next year. I think they're capable of it, but, whereas some guys really established themselves and Joey, I thought Willie took obviously a huge step, and, Danny Santana was a great job by our scouts, and Lynn and Meyer took, big steps, and the back end of the bullpen looked like it was solidifying with some real interesting arms. Like, there are also a bunch of guys that, I think we got through to on from a preparation side and what they need to do. And maybe we even saw a little bit of turn at the end, but you need to see it kind of wire to wire. And next year's going to be a big year for a number of guys.
Maybe I'm misquoting you, or I want to get, what you meant. I'm sure you're responding to that press conference from earlier, but a lot of people were reporting that you said you wanted to trade a left-handed bat in the off season. Is that accurate?
I said we're going to be open to it. Yeah. I mean, I think Jeff Wilson might ask the question that, between Maz and Joey and Willie and Chu, that we've got four guys basically for three spots. They said, do you have to trade one of them? And I said, no, we don't have to. Guys have options, or, you could carry, we're going to have the extra player on the bench next year and have 26-man roster, so you could, in theory, carry an extra bat and do some different things that way. But we have other needs, and it makes sense for us to at least explore that.
What do you make of the season you just saw from Rougned Odor?
Well, I'll start with the positive, which was that I saw a really good self-evaluation towards the end. I saw a guy that when we sat down with him, not only could he talk about what some of the things he was doing wrong, but he's also very aware. He even said, he goes, hey, I know you know, that there's some criticism of kind of the way, you know, that I carry myself on the field, that it looks like I don't care. He goes, no, that's just me. Like I give off that vibe. And he goes, it's killing me inside. You know, that's what he said though. He goes, it's killing me inside that, you know, I know how much better the team would be if I was playing to my abilities. And so that was good. And I really saw him kind of start to understand what it was we're trying to accomplish and be open to training in a different way. And, you know, I don't want to make too much of September, but he did, you know, did perform fairly well against some better pitching. You know, the flip side is he, you know, we can't win with that kind of production, right? And we just, you know, 30 and 90 is great, but, you know, with 2 to 3 months of, you know, really subpar performance and inconsistent defense and, you know, stealing bags at a 50% clip, like, that doesn't work. That's not a championship caliber performance. And so he's shown, you know, last year he defended at an elite clip. We've seen what he's capable of when he's locked in offensively. Like, you know, we've got to be able to put it all together. And I think the good thing is, one, he understands it. Two, we've got some guys that, whether it's Solak or Danny or these guys, that are going to provide some competition. And, you know, I think we started to see Ruggie respond.
You know, I'm really interested in this as we talk to John Daniels here on the Ben and Skin Show. I asked this to Eric Nadel earlier, and I think it kind of works in conjunction with the competition at second base. Is next year's third baseman currently in the organization?
I don't know, man. I mean, we're definitely going to look outside in that particular spot and see if there's the right fit for us. Now, obviously, there's some good players available, but, you know, there's a lot of other teams going to be involved in that, so we'll see. But if we do bring in somebody in from the outside, whether it's trade or free agent or whatever, then, you know, whether it's Danny or Solak or Kiner, I mean, I think you've now created some additional competition at other spots as well.
So in terms of team building, you guys are at an interesting crossroads, moving into a new stadium, a lot of young talent now coming up, and, you know, a couple veteran pitchers who are really, really good, and you could be a few pieces away. But obviously a lot of that comes down to, is it trades? How are you going to go about acquiring that talent? I'll just ask you like this. Do you feel like ownership is going to allow you to go out and be a significant player in the free agent market?
Yeah, we're going to be involved. You know, now what, you know, where that ends up, I don't know, honestly. I mean, so much of it's going to be market driven and what the, you know, what the going rates are and what the acquisition cost is, whether it's trade or free agency. But we're going to be involved. The last couple of years, we're kind of, you know, more at the middle tier free agency, middle to bottom. You know, that's where we got Lynn. That's where we got Minor. I think we're going to be, you know, looking at a bigger pool of players this year. Our payroll is going to go up with the new ballpark. You know, we don't have like a final number on kind of what that's going to be just yet, but you know, we made a decision a few years back that while, you know, other teams kind of use the term like tanking or use a strategy, I should say, kind of tanking, and they got the top draft picks, we were going to do it more the way we've done it in the past, which is just a gradual team building and, you know, adding pieces both internally and externally as the opportunities come up. And so I feel like we've done that. We've got some like legitimate championship caliber players here. We need, you know, quite a bit more, and we need to develop some other guys into that group as well.
Is there a specific thing over anything else that you feel like you guys need?
Probably the top two areas that I see us looking at would be starting pitching and third base. I think those are probably the two areas that we'd like to address if we can. You can make a real case that we can upgrade a number of other spots, right? And we're not going to do so externally in all these areas. Like, some of them are going to be competition from within or development of guys from within. But, you know, catcher, first base, center field are areas that, you know, we can be better in as well.
You know, we've talked about kind of the approach and of this team and of your front office with regard to the catcher position. And, you know, at times there's been players there for you guys who have been more offensive leaning. And then at times there's been more defensive leaning guys. Ideally, you'd find somebody who can do both, but those guys are a little bit like unicorns and really hard to find. So Where is your thought process on that moving forward as you build this team? Would you like to kind of stay in with defensive-minded guys, or if you had to choose between offense and defense, would you go with an offensive guy?
You know, we made the call last year to focus on the defensive side. We made the decision with Robbie and brought in Jeff. Ultimately, like, you know, Jeff was hurt for part of the year, and you know, we really pushed him. He'd been a 60 game or so guy, and he'd caught 80 games by September 1st this year, and his back got hurt, and I think that's directly related to the workload, and you saw some of his defensive metrics come down. So I still see it as a defensive position first. We need to give our pitchers every advantage that we can. Now, when you got like Mike Napoli circa 2011, the 900 OPS and 30 bombs from the catcher spot, like that's such a dramatic competitive advantage that changes how you look at it. But barring something like that, like we're going to prioritize defense there.
We were talking about this earlier. When are you going to know the exact dimensions of the new ballpark? Because sometimes that can impact free agency, right? If it's going to favor a certain type of hitter and some of these kinds of things. So when do you know that you can utilize specific things about the ballpark into your free agent pitch, so to speak?
I mean, we can now. I mean, I think a lot of the things that we'll pitch will be more behind the scenes, the clubhouse, the amenities, the kind of the different training elements that we're going to have for the players. As far as the field, I don't know that I personally don't feel like I have a great sense of how it's going to play. The dimensions are going to be not exact, but similar to our current park, meaning, a shorter right field than left field. The foul territory, total foul territory area is going to be somewhat similar, although shaped a little bit different. But we don't know how it's going to play with the lack of wind, when the roof's closed, or the AC, or, that we face a different direction. Home plate faces a different direction than it did now. The alignment's different. So, I don't know. I mean, I don't know how the ball's going to travel, how it's going to fly. I don't think that the surface is going to have any sort of significant difference. If anything, we think it might slow the ball down a tick more, meaning ground balls might not have the same pace getting through the infield because, with the roof closed at times and the sun not baking on the dirt, it won't get quite as dried out and not quite as hard. So we think that should be a plus for our pitching staff. But until we get in there and play a season, we're not going to know 100%.
Man, I really think you guys have done a great job with your legacy program, for lack of a better term. Just the way you guys have approached that, being a lifelong Ranger fan, there's a rich history here, but not too rich, only since like 72. But I feel like what you guys have done with Beltre and Michael Young and Josh Hamilton, and now just the way you guys sent out Globe Life Park, I have immense respect for that. I thought it was incredibly well done. And is all of that tied together? Is there somebody in charge of all of that? Is that an organizational thing? Because I kind of see all of those things working in conjunction. Is that fair?
Yeah, well, first, I agree with you. It was a lot of fun this weekend, man. Obviously, the last day was spectacular. The fans were awesome. Responded to the ballpark, responded to the alumni coming back, and then the team fit off that. And won a series and played a great game on Sunday. That was awesome. And then to have everybody back was cool. John Blake and Chuck Morgan kind of take the lead in that regard. They did a really, really good job. But we want to like connect the different generations, the teams that kind of established themselves here, the teams that won the fans over and won the ability to build this current ballpark, the teams in the 90s that made the playoffs 3 out of 4 years and some of the great performances there, and then obviously the teams in the 2000s, the World Series teams, and that kind of blends right into the current club. And it was just cool to see everybody back. It was cool to see the way the fans reacted. Obviously, Nolan coming back and throwing out the first pitch was kind of the cherry on top. And I think it's on us to continue building that legacy, to maintain good relationships with these players. And I think our future guys can learn a lot from these guys coming back as well.
Everybody is always, of course, interested of you and Nolan having an opportunity to visit. Did you guys get a chance to talk, and what was that like?
I didn't see him that day. In large part, I kind of got out of the way early. There was so much going on. We had the president here and different alumni, and so I was kind of with my family and our group up in our suite and just kind of watched the things unfold severally.
And we heard that he was only there for like 15 minutes or so, but that was really cool having him back in the park. And man, thank you so much for taking the time. You don't have to do these interviews. Somehow we've tricked you into doing them every year, and I promise you, we're going to try again to trick you into doing it again next year, but we're certainly grateful for the time and really glad that you come on with us every week. So thanks again for another season.
Yeah, anytime, guys. I appreciate your perspective on things. And, you know, I've told you guys, first of your fans, I appreciate that. You take the kind of carry the message out to our fans. But, you know, I'm always happy to answer any questions, whether they're softballs or tougher ones, and, you know, want to try to be as transparent with what we're trying to do here with our fans as possible.
Awesome stuff, man, and I have a feeling it's going to be an exciting offseason, so you best believe we're going to be hollering at you trying to get you back on the airwaves soon. Thanks again, and enjoy some much-deserved off time, and we'll talk to you here down the road.
All right, guys. Thank you.
All right, there he goes. John Daniels, another fun season of visiting with him every week.
John, what do you really think of Mike Daly?
Just said goodbye to him, but that would have been a good question.
That was good. Kay, get him back
get
on,
him back, Shippy, if you can.
Okay.
For the follow-up.
Golly, why didn't you tell us you had that gold?
He said he was willing to answer any question.
Yeah.
Sean, have you ever covered up a murder?
I think he really likes him. I feel like there's lots of exciting things happening right now, and for 1 week, it's not the Cowboys. Cowboys coming off a tough L. Mavs Media Day. I'm excited about that. I'm actually excited about the Rangers offseason. It certainly sounds like JD was telling us, we're going to be players for a third baseman. We're going to be players for starting pitching. We're going to be able to spend a lot more money with our payroll. And so it really just comes down to how crazy are these deals that are out there. If they get to the point where, man, that's just way too rich, we can't do that, then the Rangers would be out like on a Rendon. Okay, mm-hmm. It's not. I mean, he's already got a $30 million offer from the Nationals. He's apparently got an offer in hand, 7 years, $30 million per year at least to return to the Nationals. He's 29 years old, but the Rangers need a third baseman. The best free agent available is a third baseman. It sounds like, you know, the Rangers who hit on Beltre could be looking at that saying, well, this is kind of Beltre part two.
If you personally could have one insane contract and you're going to get the player, but you're allowed to have one insane contract, would you rather it be Cole or Rendon?
Ooh, I think I would rather it be Cole.
Me too.
Just because he's such a bona fide, legit, like dominant ace.
Yeah.
Just to have that, I know the argument is, okay, that guy pitches every 5 days. Some teams out there don't even care about starters. They just,
yeah,
you know, they got openers or what have you. I just think it makes a huge difference. It doesn't guarantee, if you're good enough to reach the postseason and you throw out a guy like that,
mm-hmm,
well, he could single-handedly win that game. Not literally, but he could go out there and win that game just by shutting down another team. Man, I really value that. Maybe I value it too much.
No,
I mean,
you
Rendon
don't.
Rendon would play every day, but for me, I'd take Gerrit Cole.
I would too, and I think you also have to add in the fact that you have Lynn and Minor. And I think when you look at that, you suddenly go, oh, that's my rotation? Because you're probably going to roll out three pitchers in an important playoff series. You may use four, but it's probably going to be three.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's a totally different set of circumstances. And then if Calhoun grows as a hitter, if Ruggie does even out, you know, I think everyone on this show believes that Gallo is legit. You're suddenly talking about, okay, wow, we can go compete in the playoffs if you have those three guys anchoring your rotation.
I'm not convinced Minor comes back anyways. Like, I think they could trade him.
Mm-hmm.
So, in fact, I would say it's probably 51% that they trade Minor. And if there's not a deal out there to be had, then they bring him back. I mean...
If you're going to go throw that much money at Cole, I think it makes more sense to keep Minor. Personally.
Well, I don't think you'd be keeping Cole just for 1 year. You know, you'd be signing him to a 10-year deal probably.
Right.
So
no,
it's like
I know that.
More of a long-term thing.
But he's right here in his prime.
Yeah,
you know, this is your window.
He'll be in that prime for a little bit. I think I would still, if the deal's there, if you're not going to keep Minor long-term, I'd go get a return package for him. All right, speaking of big packages, the great Jerry Jones was on today with Sean and RJ, and it was fantastic. Let's go to cut number four here, Shippy. This is the latest on Tyron Smith.
Well, we got the best news we could possibly get.
It's unlikely that we'll see him this week, but I don't know that. And on a longer-term basis, which is beyond this week, we couldn't have asked for better news. So I'm looking forward to having him back out there quick.
That is the best news. The fact that he's not, it wasn't as, because it looked like it could be serious. I mean, it looked like it could be a break or something at first.
Yeah, that was nasty to get rolled up on the way he did. And then to hear high ankle sprain, that typically is, to me, I've always felt like that is, okay, that's 6 to 8 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess this is the new Xavier Woods style high ankle sprain, that it's not a long term, and maybe it's somewhere between a regular ankle sprain and a high ankle sprain, as we were getting into the other day. But then Sean and RJ asked Jerry, okay, would the team consider moving Lyle, since he's played so well, to fill Tyron's spot on the other side?
There's an adage: you've lost two players when you have to when you have an opening or an injury situation. When you move another starting player into that, you've actually changed two players out, the one who got hurt and one you made the move. So it's sounder thinking in the offensive line to go with just substituting the player you're missing. There's no question that'll be at play here. Lyle is doing such a great job over there. And, I'm so proud for us, that we've got that kind of player. But it's the soundest, or it's the most logical move, just to bring a player in there. Now, the question is, do we have any options on that player? And that remains to be seen.
Man, the other thing about starting to move guys around, Connor Williams has been disappointing. You know, and so I think I want less upheaval on the line. I want the guys that are currently playing their positions, leave them right where they are, and then bring in a guy like Cam Fleming, let him play your left tackle, and if you need to roll help over there, roll help over there. But I don't want to start moving a bunch of guys around.
Well, and the idea used to be that all the best edge rushers were on the right side of the defense, and so that left tackle, the blind side, was so important, and I don't know that that's the case anymore.
It's not.
You know, guys move around all over the defensive line, and a lot of teams, sometimes you're – best edge rushers over on the other side.
Right.
And plus it's hard. Like I said, they move around so much. And yeah, I'm kind of subscribing to that. Not as much upheaval as limit that as much as you can. Let's go to cut number 9. Sean and RJ asked Jerry Jones, were you surprised by the lack of use of Tony Pollard?
We ran so few, relatively speaking, we ran so few offensive plays. So we never had a time that I thought that Zeke, needed, from the standpoint of how much he had played, needed a rest. And it's just hard to snap that ball without Zeke out there, especially with what he's capable of doing for us out of the backfield in the passing game as well. He was doing an outstanding job of blocking, Zeke was. He was very noticeable out there in that respect. And they were coming. Hey, like I said, good defense, good defensive front. So, not surprised, really, when we run that few plays.
Well, the problem is the way of thinking, because you're talking mutually exclusive, right? Zeke can be out there with any other formation. I mean, when you look at this and you look at how the Saints were prepared for what the Cowboys were doing and what the Cowboys actually went out and did, there's so many different things you could have done by mixing it up with different formations and having different sets out there. And there's no reason Pollard couldn't have been out there a lot with Zeke, with multiple tight ends. I mean, you weren't really getting separation, by all accounts, people who watch the film, from your receivers anyways. It's they had a flawed approach going in, and they didn't really deviate from it. And because they never got that rhythm going, there were so few plays, but they made the wrong decisions going into those few plays.
I just wonder why they had the flawed approach. Like, are there too many cooks in the kitchen? Did Nussemeier and Garrett and all these other guys that are in, you know, or Dak, who are involved in the game plan, did they deserve more credit than Kellen Moore initially? Is it crazy for us to think Kellen Moore got neutered in week 4? I mean, I really don't understand how it ended up happening. The line coming out of you know, the Cowboys organization, obviously, or I was going to say the Ford Center at the Star, is, hey, we just had too few plays right there, like Jerry said. But I don't know that simplifies it. And also, they did get beat at the line of scrimmage quite a bit, but they didn't have to continue to run into a wall. I mean, it wasn't working. Well, there wasn't there really wasn't a reason to continue doing it that way.
I agree. I think they, like, because they did have so few plays, I think they expected that it would change, and it never did. And then they never got any rhythm going, especially the way they came out to start the second half. They just zoomed down the field. But I think they overplayed their hand on the, hey, it's noisy, we got to dumb everything down. I think they overplayed that. They should have gone out there and played their normal approach.
Well, I think it complicated things that if you go back to what Travis Frederick told us on Monday, this is cut number 14 here, Shippy. It seemed like the Saints knew the plays the Cowboys were running before they snapped the ball.
You know, and they did a lot of things on defense. They came in with a great game plan. They made a lot of adjustments, and they had a lot of checks in place so that they, if they knew when we were running the ball, they would, you know, check into a pressure right into that. It was sort of the perfect deal. So you could tell that they had definitely studied and were able to kind of tee off on a couple of those things.
And yet they kept doing the same thing.
Yeah, I don't understand it. I don't understand. And then finally, let's get into Sean and RJ talking to Jerry Jones, cut number 12. Talking to Jerry about being out on Bourbon Street.
Believe it or not, we had a function there. My son had his 50th birthday celebration. And so we were right there. Of course, in New Orleans, you hotels usually right there. And I might have said this the other day, but I got to participate in two Sugar Bowls, which is rare when I was in college. And my initial awareness of what was going on outside of Arkansas, I was not from a small town, but I sure wasn't from Dallas or New York or a town like that. But my coming out as a young man really happened in New Orleans back many, many years ago when I was down there with the team before the game as a red shirt. And as well as getting to play in the Sugar Bowl, Jimmy Johnson and I both played in the same game, same team there in the Sugar Bowl. I have a long background with New Orleans. New Orleans feels like football to me. It's exciting in the fall. It's exciting to have all the fans out congregating like that. And so I really do get in the football mood when I'm in New Orleans, and I can't help it. I like to walk down that Bourbon Street.
Where did your you guys coming out as a young man happen? Do you guys remember when you're coming out? He said his coming out.
What do you think that means? What does that mean to you, Kevin?
That's where he became a man.
I think also there's like, I don't know if he was talking about the societal aspect of that, because that is high society, and I don't know if whatever their standing was in Arkansas, if they did all that. Like the society, women, what are the girls have, what is it, the debutante?
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if he was referring to that or not. I don't know anything about all that.
I don't think so, right?
Was he a part of Arkansas society? And is that why Miss Arkansas dated him in college?
I don't know. I thought he just meant that's where he became a man, which that could mean lots of different things.
Coming out as a young man.
It happened at a port. And
so what do you think he means there?
I think it's the first time that he went to see maybe one of the first big cities and good times he ever had.
Yeah, one of his first big parties.
Like
my coming out as a young man happened in Denton.
Yeah.
That was when my coming out as a young man happened.
That's when you came out? Did you tell your parents?
No, that wasn't. No. See, man, out in the country, it's not real accepted.
Right.
You listen to a lot of Coldplay?
Okay, Coldplay's first three albums are great, Shippy. I know what you're saying, but their first three albums are great.
Hey, we agree line from that one movie,
you guys who didn't,
the worst thing could happen to them.
You guys ended up in the Hall of Fame of your high school that you didn't even attend your senior year.
Not yet.
Like, yeah. See, that's
there's still time for them to pull that back off the table. That won't happen.
So you didn't want that getting out?
No. We did a video on it.
Move, Plano.
It's October 11th and 12th. Is when we're inducted into the Burtner Hall of Fame.
By the way, we have another. We need to make a show bet.
Can I go to that?
Okay.
Because
half beard.
No, I'm definitely not doing a half beard. I can't grow this beard back.
Half stash.
I'll do a half beer.
So Allen is going to play Prosper.
Okay.
Allen versus Prosper. This is a 6A showdown. We're in the final countdown to this game, Shippy. By the way, Allen High School, where Skin lives, versus
Prosper High School, which is the school district that my kids are in. Mm-hmm. And
is the Salina Border playing?
Well, the Prosper Salina Border, there's a brand new stadium right there on Frontier, $53 million stadium.
Wow. It's a good one.
And the starting quarterback for Prosper High School just happens to be
Max Rogers.
Mine and KB's old roommate's son.
Oh.
Okay.
Yeah. Former hype man of our hip-hop group.
You guys have met KB.
So you guys are going to put a show bet, Allen versus Prosper?
Well, I think we need to. I think we probably ought to try to get our broadcast out there. We need to go do some shows out there, at least one show, maybe that Friday. Maybe the gin would have us out there that Friday.
Oh, that's a great idea.
We need to talk to our friends at Balcones and make that happen. But maybe we do some sort of a show bet because Allen should be favored. Allen's a powerhouse. There's 7,000 kids in the graduating class.
Yep.
Prosper's just a little engine that could.
Right. That game is this Friday?
No. It's coming up here.
The 11th?
It's coming up a little bit down the road. I don't have it in front of me.
Because Shippy and I are going to do a bet for the Olney versus Seymour game.
Yeah, we are.
On the 11th, coming up in 2 weeks.
Seymour? Yeah. What's that?
Yeah, so Shippy's, the Shipman family is from Seymour.
Uh-huh. Is that right?
Seymour,
Janai?
40 minutes from Olney.
Nope, the Mike side.
That's the Mike side.
They're originally like to see more of the Janai side. I'm just saying, out and about at social things, at social events, mm-hmm. and things like that.
Kim K.
All right.
Sir. What does J.J. Pierce play? Because that can be the Janai.
Oh, she's J.J. Pierce, right? Yeah, that's right. All right. Yeah. Well, we'll get more information on that as we head towards that. Definitely not a half beard.
Hey, it's November 1st is when that big game is. So you guys got some time for Allen and Prosper.
The Seymour Olney game?
November.
That's next Friday.
Oh, crap. Yeah. Is that right?
We're going.
That game's being played in Olney. We got the home field advantage, Shippy.
How much is that stadium? How much is that stadium out there worth?
Oh, probably $100.
They play in a field, don't they?
Yeah.
Coming up next, what's coming up on the G-Bag Nation right here on 105.3 The Fan.